American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Greetings, nerds. This is Cena Nerd. I'm your host, Sarah Belmont, and with me, as always, is our Mr. Producer, Will Polk. How are you doing tonight, Will?
Doing very well, Sarah. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine, but I'm going to be honest, Will.
Okay.
I watched the Eternals trailer. Liked the Eternals trailer. I don't remember anything about it.
I had to rewatch it today, as a matter of fact, before we started to record, because, you know, I liked the trailer. It was very atmospheric, mm-hmm. and with the visuals, and, you know, I still haven't seen Nomadland, so I can't like say, oh yeah, it was just like that scene in the movie and Chloe Zhao's direction did this, that, or the other. But for a teaser, I was actually wondering, like, okay, now which one of these, you know, since it's an MCU film, which one of these scenes are actually going to show up in the film, and what is it, which one is just like, the head fake that we got, like, for example, with Infinity War, where we had Hulk running with Captain America in the battle in Wakanda, and of course that scene never showed up in the film, so we had like Battle Hulk. So I was watching it for, you know, especially, you know, the thing that I thought that would be that example in the trailer is the whole bit of them around the dinner table talking about who could lead the Avengers.
Yeah, I remember that line. This movie is so funny because I think honestly the first thought I had after watching the trailer was, we should have already seen this movie.
Yeah.
If 2020 had gone differently, we would have already seen it. It's so weird to me. We still haven't even seen Black Widow. And there's something about it that even though we're starting to get movies and things are starting to go back to quote-unquote normal, it's almost like this hesitation, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
You're totally right. It's just like, now that the things are getting back to somewhat normal and restrictions are easing, and it's like the first time you go to the store, and it's like, and if you forget your mask, and then you're like, oh, wait a minute, I don't have to wear it unless I just want to. That's kind of the feeling with films this year. So it's like, is this real? Like, are we really going to get this? And especially with the Eternals, I mean, when I saw it, and, you know, and of course thinking about the storylines in it, and they talked about how they don't interfere, and then, and you know, I've heard people on other podcasts and stuff like talk about, well, you know, what's so special about, you know, why didn't they show up during the Infinity Saga, you know, and stop Thanos. Yeah. What, you know, what's so special about now, you know, post the blip that is why they had decided to come.
We should be getting in November, which is great. Other things that are to come in the future, that I've also forgotten about because it's been a long time since we stepped foot in the fandom. Mm-hmm. But don't forget, Will, in August, DC Titans will come back.
Yeah, yeah. So the cast teased a little thing last week during the HBO Warner Media upfronts. Mm-hmm. And so they shared a tweet of all of them, you know, doing their thing, and at the end, it's like, we'll be back in August. And so I'm actually looking forward to this season. You know, I thought like the second season with Deathstroke ended, and reflecting on it was actually pretty strong. overall, especially in comparison to the first season. And so yeah, I'm looking forward to this, and you know, the other thing I'm just looking forward to is the date when Doom Patrol returns.
Doom Patrol number one, Titans number like nine. I agree. The second season, a lot better, more consistent than the first season.
Yeah.
Still need to kill that character that I don't like, but that's another story. Henry Cavill is to star in the Highlander reboot.
Yep. Yeah, that was some new, you know, he's like, well, you know, if DC's moving on from me, I'll just move on from them. I wonder if it's going to be like a straight up reboot where he is going to be McCloud, or if it's going to be a situation where he's you know, playing a descendant. But there can only be one. There can only be one
person. I don't know the lineage or the legacy. I don't know.
I don't even know how to speak
tonight. Let's be honest. DC comic. Well, she's not a DC. Ava DuVernay. The produced, and we've talked about this show before. So Naomi has officially been picked up for series, which is great news. Unfortunately, with that pickup, Painkiller, the Black Lightning spinoff, is not picked up, but it could be headed to HBO Max.
Yeah. So Naomi did get picked up. It'll be a mid-season premiere. So I guess that'll be, first of 2022, whenever the CW schedules that. Definitely looking forward to it. I know the pilot got picked up and it has gone into production, and they dropped a pretty sweet poster with the news of the series pickup. And then the other thing, obviously, Painkiller, and we'll talk about that more when we recap Black Lightning. But the other interesting thing with the CW news this week, as far as pickups and series, is that they picked up the Powerpuff Girls, but they are having them reshoot the pilot.
Hey, Game of Thrones, that pilot had to get reshot.
Star Trek is another one. So, I mean, it's not unprecedented, but I just found it very funny because they just leaned in so heavy on this whole Powerpuff thing, and then they ended up like having to reshoot the pilot. So it will be interesting to see what they, if they could, if we ever see like the unaired pilot versus the actual one that airs, I'd grab some popcorn for that, because I think in either case it's going to be rough.
Amazon buys MGM.
Yeah, that was the big news this week with Amazon spending $8.4 billion to acquire the whole films and TV shows that MGM has. And I guess there's a lot of speculation, like what's going to happen now with whether or not will Amazon dump a lot of new features straight to their streaming platform on Prime, or will it go to theaters? And I think the big things I've seen is Amazon is going to continue to like pump that new content to theaters. But there's a lot of this possibilities there now that they have access to that library, and I'm just hoping I get more content with my Prime subscription.
And also, Aaron Taylor Johnson has been cast as Kraven the Hunter, and Sony, of course, is going to make that its own villain lead movie, because they eventually want to do the Sinister Six with our lovely Tom Holland's Spider-Man. Yep. Granted, we haven't even seen Morbius yet.
Yeah. Did it get pushed back to 2022?
Like, I was tracking Morbius release date. No.
I thought they were supposed to come out this summer, and then it got pushed to the fall. And then I think, I want to say it got pushed back again, but I'll have to Google that while we're like while we're like recording here. I'm just curious now.
Yeah. I don't know. I remember liking the trailer and being intrigued by it, but that was so pre-COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. Denaya Guerrero.
Will reprise her role as Okoye in the Black Panther spinoff. She's the one who hooked up with Bucky.
That was not her, the other Dora Milaje. Yeah. Okoye was the first captain of the Dora Milaje.
Yes. Who's the one who hooked up with Bucky?
That was Aho. Aho, yeah.
Yeah, because I recognized the actress name because she was on The Walking Dead.
Right.
But then I saw the character name, and for some reason I was thinking that was the same name as, yeah. We know where my mind went, okay? All things lead back to that fan fiction.
Yes.
In other MCU news, Christopher McDonald is cast in Secret Invasion. Again, guys, we need to work on the titles because this is no secret anymore. As the new character that may cross over into the MCU movies and TV shows. You know, some would say, well, more characters, more problems. The MCU, more characters, more entertainment.
Yep.
Just made that up myself. And last but not least, The Flash plans to have some mini crossovers in the first 5 episodes of season 8, which leads me to my first question for tonight.
Yeah.
Did we just watch the season finale of The Flash, or are there more episodes?
There are more episodes. So this is the end. Remember, so the new showrunner, Eric Wallace, is breaking up the season into short graphic novels now, the concept. So we just saw the end of 7A.
Okay.
For the graphic novel, yeah.
I honestly spent the last 2 weeks watching The Flash. A, very confused. Mm-hmm. B, very bored.
Yeah.
C, really don't understand how I can keep watching this show and still not really understand any of the plot points.
Yeah. There was no plot point in the Force Wars other than it's the power of love. I mean, we're going to talk it all out and we will. Yeah. The biggest takeaway from the last few weeks of this show is Barry and Al and Iris finally like had sex. I mean, that's basically it.
That was so creepy. I'm glad they didn't show it.
But I mean, well, and I guess, you know, I think the whole theme, even though it was very forced and very convoluted over the last couple weeks with the whole Force Wars and this whole family thing, it was very, very forced, very convoluted, not really, you know, they used these MacGuffins of the various forces to, like, you know, create this narrative to basically get us into the place that, you know, that Barry and Iris are finally going to have a family of their own with human kids, not ones that are created in some way that they really never fully explained. So these four, you know, the four individuals that they, you know, created, air quotes, in the Force Wars, there's no stakes or emotional attachment to these people or anything like it. And so that's why I think the whole family analogy like failed.
Right.
In this 7A.
Yep.
Because they didn't give us any, they didn't really give us any real good backstory as far as, you know, other than the usual techno babble that they always spew as far as how these people got these powers. And then Joe throws out this, you know, crazy analogy, like, you know, you don't, you know, even if your kids do bad things, we still love them kind of deal.
Right.
And then his crazy pep talk this last week, which again, just it's like falls flat now. They just didn't really give a narrative reason why we should care about these people. And they never gave even in their flashy science way, they never really explained how these forces really came into being, other than when they, whenever they created that artificial speed force to get Barry his powers back, somehow it like led to the creation of these forces. I mean, it was just a royal mess. I mean, it was a mess. I'm glad they're done with this part of the show. I hope that 7B is much better, because they're losing a fan here. I'm just gonna admit it. They're losing a fan.
Yeah. No, it breaks my heart when Will has to shit talk the Flash, even though it also makes me want to just say I told you so. But no, I've been a fan of this show too, not to Will's extent, but I have really loved, and I still, we always say and go back to this, the first season of Flash is a perfect season of television. So yeah. It's really hard, but move over, because we always talk Flash and we don't really have anything new to say so much.
Well, I do have one last thing to say before we go. And the thing that I'm hopeful, and I don't know if we're going to, that part of the 5-episode arc that they're planning on starting off season 8 is, even though they're not true crossovers, they are going to be, I guess, little mini crossovers. Things that we saw like with Flash and Arrow early on in the Arrowverse.
Right.
And so, obviously, so one of the things that could happen, and I'm hopeful that will happen, is we'll see Black Lightning show up again in Central City, because Barry and Jeff did have a bond, and I think Grant and Chris really played well off each other in the Crisis. That's one of the highlights of the Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover. So I'm hoping we'll see that. Maybe if scheduling works, Melissa will show up again as Supergirl, and I think they'll probably integrate the other like Batwoman and some other people as one-offs in those little mini crossovers at the start of season 8.
They still have plenty of toys to play with, with shows ending and whatnot. And the newest show is Superman and Lois. They're just going on all cylinders right now. Yeah. The only kind of broken one continues to be Jordan for me.
Mm.
Just because I don't think that actor, looks wise, like these two boys look like, yeah, they're fraternal twins, but the level of acting, like when Jonathan says something, that kid really is a great kid actor. I have problems with some of the line deliveries by Jordan. I really do. It just feels so melodramatic and like, oh, I'm emo. Yeah. I watched the Lego movie and saw what Batman was doing, and that's how I'm going to portray. But let's talk about the real star of the show. Let's talk about Mr. John Henry Irons, not to be confused with Captain Luther. I am so looking forward to fleshing out this character more. Mm-hmm. We knew from very early on he was going to be interesting. But the way that they explain or tiptoed around and then kind of is like, no, this isn't Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Okay. And just that scene of like, you're not the Man of Steel I am. I was like, this is pretty badass. And they ruined it when he got hit with a car. But no, I this was a really good episode. I like what they're where they're going with things. I really like this alternative timeline.
Mm-hmm. I'm there with you. This reveal of Captain Luthor, actually not Captain Luthor, but John Henry Irons, I like the way this show is using all the elements of the Superman mythos, because Steel was a character who came about, after the death of Superman comic back in the 90s, and you had the four different incarnations of Superman come back before Kal-El, was reborn after being killed by Doomsday. And the way that they used that and then made it their own, like with turning Nat, who's John Henry's niece in the comic, but mm-hmm. in the series here, making her his daughter with Lois, and to really amplify the emotional stakes of why and the motivations for why he came to Earth Prime to stop Kal-El after seeing what happened on his Earth. This really adds such a deeper level as he was playing someone else to find out more what was going on in Smallville as far as what was going on with EdgeCorp and his relationship with Lois, and then we find out that on his Earth he and Lois were married, and it just hits all the right beats story wise without the unnecessary melodrama that we see in other shows. And I think Todd Heibring, who's the showrunner for this show, definitely learned some lessons from his time on The Flash and being an EP of that, and it has definitely did some good course corrections as far as how to tell a good story without the unnecessary CW melodrama. I mean, this show could easily transition over to HBO Max and not miss a beat and be just as enjoyable. And that's why I watch the extended cuts, because I mean, I feel like I'm watching an HBO Max level type of show.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Jordan says something. And it's like,
I hear what I get what you're saying about Jordan, but I think back to the movie Man of Steel and whenever Clark was learning how to use his powers and, the sensory overload of the hearing and stuff. So I was wondering where they were going to go with that, because the week prior, he got beat up by Tag, who mm-hmm. blames him for giving, blames him for mutating him. Even though I think it has something to do with the X kryptonite. Because thinking back now, that party, I guess, was near the mines.
Yeah, it's definitely X kryptonite.
Yeah, yeah. So that, so all of that was going on last week's episode, and them going back to Metropolis and playing the football game, and it could be
just that we are more familiar with the other actor because mm-hmm. he was on Big Little Lies,
yeah.
Little Fires.
Yeah.
Very similar names. But I just, yeah, I felt like this week in particular, John had more of the like teenage angst going on, but mm-hmm. I didn't feel as much of like, okay, so this is a part where I get up and get myself something to drink. And I guess that I'm just also tired of Jordan doing this, being a, like, they need to, I need to see a different side of Jordan, mm-hmm. what I'm getting at, because right now he's a kid with powers who doesn't know how to control them. I've never seen that before. Oh wait, I have seen that before many times.
Yeah.
And I think he defaults into playing victim way too much. Like, there needs to be some accountability there.
Yeah, I get that point. Yeah, and hopefully they will break that now, given that, you know, he is starting to understand how to use his powers. Mm-hmm. The first thing we saw was the indestructibility. The second thing was the enhanced speed, strength and speed. Now we had the sensory aspects of it, and of course the heat vision, which I thought was pretty cool last week with how Clark just like took the full blast into his hands while he was on the land on the field there. But to your point about Little Fires Everywhere, and Jonathan, the act, thinking about that series and love triangles and stuff, and how they dealt with that in this show this week with Jonathan and Jordan, and Jordan focusing in on Lana's daughter to sort of get control of his powers, and I'm glad, and every week you think they're going, there are things that happen, like, obviously Jonathan reaching out to break, to break up the fight, and Jordan ends up breaking his hand. I think those things can easily fall into bad tropes. But I think the deft way the show is handling those things with the way the brothers communicate with one another, and also seeing how Superman, how Clark handles it as a father, helps it from becoming that, the sitcom family tropey kind of resolution that all things are good. As the series moves forward, because there are consequences, as you said, and I think Jordan is going to have to start learning how to deal with the consequences of things that he's done.
Yeah, I also it's kind of interesting. I'm surprised by how much Lois is almost the lead of this show.
Mm-hmm.
More so than even Clark, just because, and they're making it a big point, like, and we've talked about this before, like, Edge is her villain.
Yeah.
And she brings Clark into that periodically, but it's a lot of times it's her, and then she, and yes, we know the classic saying, like, she's just a damsel in distress, but she's and maybe that's why I really like John Henry Irons' character so much, is because they were able to utilize him to also help save her and help her investigate Edge. Mm-hmm. And so she didn't have to rely on Clark. Meanwhile, Clark is more focused on how does he be a dad? Yeah. And how does he also now be a dad to one son with powers and one son without powers? And we, last week's episode, we sort of got the building of like that jealousy. Mm-hmm. But that's what really, what I'm interested in seeing happen with the boys, is that desire for love from their father. Yet one of them pretty much is like you're like with me, like, yeah, like we have these abilities, and then the envy that comes from each other, like the sibling rivalry, I think will be interesting, more so than the clear love triangle that they're building.
No, I don't think there's gonna be a love triangle. I think
I remember in a promo the writer even mentioned this love triangle. I don't know what you're talking about, Will.
Maybe it'll happen. Maybe it'll happen. Yeah, you're right. If one of the writers did, then I stand corrected. But I'm hoping it don't go there. I really don't. But while you're describing Clark and learning how to be the father of someone, one who has powers, one who doesn't, and how he navigates that. you know, that, I think that is that's one of the strengths of this show.
Yep.
But also, I'm thinking back. I don't know if it was last week's episode or maybe one of the earlier five with Lois and, you know, talking with Jonathan, especially whenever he was so, you know, still upset still with losing being the football hero in Metropolis, and then, you know, they come to Smallville and he's relegated to the bench, and then all of a sudden Jordan, because of his powers, now is like on the team, and it's like the coach loves him because of what he can do. And you know, you're right, there is going to be a point in the series where Jonathan is not going to be covering for him. And we saw that some in this episode. Whenever he was talking to Lana's daughter, it was just like, yeah, you know, Tag beat him up. You know, he told him everything. I mean, basically he said everything, but that he has superpowers.
Yeah, it's.
So maybe that's how they'll address it, more so than it becoming a jealousy thing.
Maybe, which is also good, because they made it a clear decision to early on bring the boys in to mm-hmm. the secret, and now they're expanding the secrets, you know, yeah. with everything else that's going on, which was an interesting revelation of like, we've brought them in, but they still don't really understand everything mom and dad do.
Right.
And all of the danger.
Yep.
So, and you know, one of them is going to slip. Like, they're going to tell somebody. They're going to get drunk.
That's season two.
That's season two. But yeah, this show it's coming back strong. I mean, the competition is light these days, but it's all good. And
yeah.
And so on that note, Will, why don't you talk to us about the series finale of Black Lightning?
Yeah, so we had the series finale this week, They really rushed this one. I as I was watching the finale, I mean, there were a lot of parts, and I was worried about this as the season started winding down, and I realized how many episodes they actually had left. Like, there's a lot that they have to like wrap up. So overall, series finales are always hard to stick the landing. I feel that, while they did provide resolution to all the major story points in the series, I just felt that between this from production aspect and presentation aspect, I felt it was very rushed. There was just some funky ass edits all throughout the show. So any momentum that got built up was like immediately cut to it because of the commercial break. And so, you know, so from that standpoint, the finale was, it was disappointing in that standpoint, just to being honest. Because I just felt like they just didn't, I just felt like the CW was just like, and even it just seemed like everybody was just like, let's just get this done and just, you know, be done with it. That was the kind of vibe that but like I said, with the edits and everything, it just, yeah. And the pacing, how it felt. But as far as the story, I mean, itself, you know, we at the end of the penultimate episode, Jefferson and Tobias have a showdown in Jefferson's childhood home that Tobias had bought up all this land to develop. And because of the dampening field, Jefferson didn't have any of his power. So of course Tobias, you know, easily handled him, and we, you know, thought he was dead. And he actually calls Jennifer or JJ, to say, hey, here's your dad. And so we start this week's episode, looking for Jeff. Jeff's buried alive. We find out. And so, you know, so Jefferson starts reminiscing about various things, and He actually ends up regaining his powers from the Prometheum that was in the soil that was created when Jennifer, I guess, in the previous season when they were fighting the Makovians, activated the Prometheum, which is actually a real element. So he was able to draw on that. And again, it was sort of like, all right, this is a new ability that's just coming out of left field. So, you know, that's what I'm talking about, what was kind of like weird. And then, of course, the, you know, China Ann McClain did return for the series finale. Mm-hmm. So she and JJ have a showdown. Turns out JJ was a creature in the ionosphere who was happy to feed Jennifer Pierce powers. But of course, obviously, but was evil. So they have a big fight, and you know, again, it was very rushed, and very, yeah, it was just very rushed, and it's just like, well, you know, again, it would have been good if they had another episode or two that really fleshed that out. Yeah, but you know, they had, you know, of course, you know, finale, Jefferson and Tobias do have their one big showdown again in Tobias's place, and you know, they break Lala out of the carbonite that he was placed in a few episodes back by Ishmael. In the process, Jefferson, you know, Tobias gets knocked out the window and gets impaled. And then he reverts back to his old self and, you know, dies and stuff. Then we have the family reunion, you know, the family comes together, Grace and Anissa finally have their wedding. And it was a very interesting shot because, you know, I've been hearing, like, just listening to other shows and people talking about, you know, China's leaving, and something happened on set, apparently, that led her to leave the show. And sure. Yeah, and some, you know, there's some things that she maybe didn't get along with Cress or I don't know what it is. So if any fans are listening, have any scoop on that, I know Cress was on Blurreds in the Hood this week with Jay Washington and Winston A. Marshall, and they didn't talk about that, but I mean, I know Jay had mentioned it a few times on Blurs in the Hood that there's stuff going on behind the scenes on the show that he can't get into because he's friends with a lot of people on the cast and stuff. But I've seen it on some message boards that, you know, Jeff, that Cress and China don't get along. So, yeah. So, and it kind of played out, you know, and after reading about that, hearing about that, and then watching the final scene and just how people were like kind of blocked in the scene and how it kind of played out, you can kind of see that because they didn't have, they didn't have a scene with Jeff and Jennifer reuniting after finding out that JJ indeed was bad, which Jeff actually earlier on in the season when JJ first appeared, he actually didn't believe it was Jennifer. He already had a bad feeling about it. So you would think that because they had this great, you know, revelation that, you know, Jennifer really, this is our real Jennifer back, they would have, you know, one-on-one kind of scene together. They didn't. So, yeah. So maybe it gives some credence to some of the things I've heard people talk about online. But, the final scene before they cut fade to black is actually Lala in Tobias's condo, which I thought was a weird way to end the series. You would think, you know, that probably would have been better. You know, you'd think you would end the show with, you know, with the hero's family and how Jeff was like, yeah, I'm passing the torch to you know, Wild and Thunder and Lightning and TC. But no, they end the series with Lala, which I guess, you know, I guess they were really feeling strong that Painkiller was going to get picked up. But obviously, you know, we learned Monday before the finale even aired that CW decided to pass on the Painkiller pilot. And Painkiller also, you know, I guess the build for hit that show, assuming it did get picked up, the kill code that he had to kill the Pierces was deactivated by TC. So, you know, so they were doing a lot of setup for Painkiller beyond the backdoor pilot earlier in the season. But, you know, overall, you know, this was an amazing series. Clearly, finales are always hard to land. But, you know, I think it, when you think about the legacy that it's left, because, you know, it actually premiered before Black Panther as far as the film. And, you know, I think it was a contemporary of like Luke Cage as well on Netflix. So, you know, it was really the start of superheroes of color, you know, being leads and able to lead a show or a film, you know, successfully for some time. So, you know, when we look back, you know, it will be like time of like when the Arrowverse started to grow up a little bit too, because it was more grounded that we're seeing like with Superman and Lois and also in the genre too, with like Falcon and Winter Soldier. You know, you can tell grounded stories in a superhero context. So I think, you know, it definitely has some legacy building from that standpoint.
Yeah. Speaking about grounded content, I went all in on Mare of Easton on HBO.
I'm meaning to check that out. Yeah.
That show is like True Detective.
Huh. Wow.
It surprised me with where they went, and I was really surprised that last week's episode wasn't the finale. But we're getting the finale this week, and we've talked about this recently with Jupiter's Legacy. Like, when you have a good mystery that continues to evolve, and if you play it right, it really makes you just want to watch like more and more and more. But I watched that, and then surprisingly, I pretty much am caught up on A Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, okay. How is that? I mean, I know a lot of people are kind of down on that series now.
Give Elizabeth Moss another freaking Emmy. She had a scene last night. Oh my God, I have never seen an actress change her voice in such a way where she sounded like a demon and she was yelling at this character. And it just was, oh my God, give this woman an Oscar. And I've watched the last three or four episodes. This show is one of the few shows where I do tend to tear up with some of the stuff they go through. And some of the stuff, and I'll always remember the previous season finale when you see the kids on the airplane that get out of Gilead, and then one of the fathers is reunited, and then another father realizes his kid isn't on there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And so it's this mixture of joy because some of the kids got out, but not my kid. And what does that mean? And I don't know. I forget. I always do this with this show. Like, I can't watch everything because it's pretty much a horror film.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's this weird humanity, and they play into all of these things about parenthood, marriage, love, sex, gender roles. I don't know. It gets to me, but yeah. I can see why people are a bit down, but I also, last night's episode, I was just like, oh my God, this show.
You know, whenever a show hits you that way, even if you leave it, but when you come back, it's just like, oh yeah, this is why I love this show to begin with. I mean, that's, you know, it gets you hooked back in. That's the mark of a good series.
Yeah. A way to, I mean, I think we always talk about this, about like season one usually is good, but your following seasons can't be rinse and repeat. You have to play the same things. You have to play the same elements, but in a very refreshing new way. And I think what you also have to do is, season one was good, but it was all told through the single perspective. And so if you change one variable in that how then does this world work? And then that's what this following season about, and that's what they're able to do, where like the first season is all about just introducing you to Offred and Gilead. And then the second season, they add another layer. And then the third, she gets moved out of that house. And then the fourth, and now she's in Canada. Huh. And so it's her, like, after 7 years of being in this place, now she's in Canada. And so you're recognizing more of the PTSD and all of this other stuff that's happening. And sadly enough, her daughter is still in Gilead. And what does that mean? Yeah. So. Wow. Well, anyway, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I think that's it for us tonight. Will, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me at Will M. Polk. That's WILLMPOLK.
And you can find me at SJ Belmont, SJBLMONT. Please follow our crew on Twitter at Scene and Nerd. Friend us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. But most importantly, rate, follow, and comment on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Good night, geek out. You're welcome.